responding to an armed robbery in progress. A motorist took a left turn in front of me to get their Taco Bell, ended up hitting my cruiser head on. The impact knocked me unconscious. Because I couldn't control the vehicle, because I was unconscious, my vehicle went into a building.
I actually experienced concussion as an amateur. 55 years ago, there wasn't any education on concussion.
You're in a profession where you are getting into physical altercations with people, and there are head injuries and there are head blows.
So back then, to get a head injury, you had to get knocked out.
You got hit in the head, just kind of deal with it. You know, do you need to go to the hospital? No? Okay. Well, your next call's holding.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience. Along with my co-host, Bonnie Rumley, LCSW EMTB, I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with former professional boxer Ray Ciangolini and law enforcement officer Chris Belair about second impact injury, also known as concussion and traumatic brain injury. Later in this episode, in the Resilience Toolbox segment, we'll be speaking with Jane Baker from Advanced Micro Nutrition about HealRight nutrition bars for first responders. We'd like to invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Respond to Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our website is ResponderTV.com with past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Ray and Chris after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers. With vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW EMTB.
So today we're joined by Ray Ciangolini, a former professional boxer and renowned concussion awareness advocate who's battled Parkinson's syndrome and dementia pugilistica for many years. These progressive conditions are the direct result of his improper management of numerous concussions during his boxing career. Ray travels the country lecturing at colleges about the importance of prompt and proper concussion management and the possible repercussions of circumventing appropriate concussion protocol. Ray also speaks at TBI seminars and medical institutions about living with a traumatic brain injury, stage 2 dementia, and Parkinson's tremors. Ray is a member of the Rochester, New York Boxing Hall of Fame and the Geneva, New York Sports Hall of Fame. Officer Chris Belair is a 14-year veteran of the City of Danbury Police Department and is currently assigned to the Patrol Division. Chris is a member of the Crisis Intervention Team, a rifle officer, field training officer, law enforcement instructor, and a member of the Danbury Police Dive Team, bringing with him 19 years of technical and deep water diving. Officer Belair is also a State of Connecticut EMT for the past 26 years and an NRA firearms instructor for the last 12 years. Ray and Chris, welcome to Respond to Resilience.
It's great to have both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with a little bit of background on the first responder side of this. Because first responders are at risk for on-the-job traumatic brain injury. That could be from assaults, vehicle crashes, falls, a collapse of ceilings or buildings. Firefighters may hit their head in a low-visibility environment. There's also explosive forced entry and flashbang devices. And according to NFIRS, which is the U.S. Fire Administration's National Fire Incident Reporting System, and the NFPA, from the years 2015 to 2019, 11% of injuries reported were due to head injury, and that's the number 3 most common reported injury. And according to fire engineering, research has shown that 76% of firefighters report at least one head injury in their lifetime. So, Bonnie, let's dive in and speak with Ray and Chris about this topic.
Yeah, so just thinking about the statistics, Chris, made me think about you and why you're joining us. Could you talk to us about how many concussions you've had in your career and maybe some of the things that led to those?
Absolutely. So I've had a total of 4 concussions. Only one has been on the job. You know, my first one was 8 years old. I was playing soccer, got kicked in the head with a soccer ball. And, you know, jumped right up. Wasn't a real big deal. A little dizzy, but not a huge issue. Second one was the day after my 10th birthday. I had just gotten a bicycle for my birthday. And like any 10-year-old, I'm screaming down the street. And had a rough patch of construction in the roadway and went over the handlebars, hit my head on the ground, woke up a couple seconds later being loaded into a garbage truck from a family friend that had seen me. The third one was a motorcycle accident in 2001. Going around a corner, hit some sand and hit the curb and ended up getting thrown headfirst into a rock. It actually ended up splitting my helmet into 3 pieces. That was the first time that I really had any extended period of unconsciousness. That was probably about a minute or two. I woke up to first responders showing up and loading me up into the ambulance. The most severe one was the on-the-job injury was 2010, responding to an armed robbery in progress. As I was responding, a motorist took a left turn in front of me to get their Taco Bell and ended up hitting my cruiser head on. The impact knocked me unconscious. Because I couldn't control the vehicle because I was unconscious, my vehicle went into a building. I don't remember anything about the accident or immediately following. I remember waking up at one point hearing a fellow officer yelling my name, telling me to wake up. I woke up, looked at him. I remember them saying, you know, just stay awake. And I don't remember anything else. From all information that I've had about that incident has been told to me. I don't remember anything about it. Apparently I was fighting with EMS and in the hospital. And I remember waking up the next day with a collar around my neck. And they had concern that I had broken my neck. But that's those are the 4 that have really kind of had issues. The concerning part about the last one was the neurologist that examined me explained that because there was such a dramatic increase in the periods of unconsciousness with all of my concussions, that they were concerned that any future head injuries could be catastrophic.
Well, Chris, we'll definitely circle back to all of that and some of the effects that you experienced post concussion. Ray, can you talk a little bit about your journey through professional boxing and how it led you to become a national concussion awareness advocate?
Well, I actually experienced concussion as an amateur, and I received 2 in 1 week, different fights. And after that day, from a high honor student, never been in trouble, fell apart and didn't know why, because 55 years ago, there wasn't any education on concussion. And there was just a lot of pressure, peer pressure. Teachers thought my change in attitude, you know, my success was going to my head, and I was sleeping a lot. We didn't know. My biggest enemy was my durability. I'd never been knocked down or knocked out. So back then, to get a head injury, you had to get knocked out. You had to lose consciousness. I'd never been off my feet, so I'm absorbing this punishment called, and we're Boston University now. We're doing a lot of studies on what's called subconcussive blows. And they're worse than a concussion now because they accumulate and they jump up on you. So where you have the concussion, you have it and you deal with it. But subconcussive, you don't know. And they do add up, especially with children now, 14 and under. We're concerned with the brain developing, that these subconcussive blows are going to cut their future potential. And I know through mine, I started at the age of 13. So there's other things that point to where this damage came from. It didn't have to be boxing, could have been soccer.
Come on. Check it.
You know, what you're saying connects to what Chris just said in his stories, and it makes sense. The subconcussive piece makes a lot of sense from what Chris was saying about it getting worse each time. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me that's not mainstream yet. You know, people have only in recent years been talking about concussions, let alone the topic you're bringing up. So you're raising awareness, and there's no time limit on that. So don't worry.
No. But I can tell you there's still that old tough guy mentality out there. Yeah. They see me coming, they shut the door. Hmm. Okay, you want to win. Yeah, nature of the beast.
Mm-hmm. Chris, do you see anyone talking about concussions on the job or through any of your law enforcement trainings or anything like that?
No. And it's unfortunate because, you know, like Ray was saying, it is accumulative, and, you know, you're in a profession where you are getting into physical altercations with people, and there are head injuries and there are head blows, and it's not discussed as much as it should be, if at all. You know, right. It's, you know, the mentality of, hey, you got hit in the head, just kind of deal with it. You know, do you need to go to the hospital? No. Okay. Well, your next call is holding. So.
Sounds like the same stigma we're dealing with trauma,
right.
And its impact. Do you feel that you have any lasting symptoms that you could point to as a result of the accumulation?
I struggle with headaches. I struggle with memory loss. I'll lose my train of thought. You know, certain things pop up in my head as, you know, driving down the highway, even going to work or going to visit a friend, and I'll have to pull over on the side of the highway because I will completely forget where I'm going. Yeah. And you know, it takes me a couple seconds, but it'll click back in. Oh, okay. That's right. And I'll go on my way and not really think anything of it. So, I mean, outside from the headaches and the memory loss, other than that, not really.
Ray, so your organization is called Second Impact. Can you speak a little bit about what the Second Impact is, and then maybe define a little more if there's a difference between TBI and concussion?
I think they're both the same in my world. Traumatic brain injury and concussion. But if you take care of the concussion to begin with, you won't get the TBI. I don't know if I'm turning you around here, but
no. And no. So speak to that, and what does Second Impact mean in your world?
Well, it was a Second Impact that did me in. in that first week. That's why I named it the Second Impact. And my goal is to go around to anywhere. I've gone to police departments, fire departments, colleges, everywhere, that first concussion is so important to take care of it and make sure that you're completely healed before going back into whatever you do, job or competition. Because if you get that second one before the first one heals, that's where the damage is done. And in some cases, in most cases, you do get brain damage. To what degree varies. But sometimes we see death, especially in the younger group where the brain is developing. And the youth brain is not developed like an adult brain. It's not myelinated like an adult brain is, which makes them more vulnerable to damage, serious damage.
I wanted to ask you, I think there's been a lot of change in this field of concussion and post-concussive syndrome in the last 10, 20 years. Can you speak to right now what the research is showing that taking care of a concussion means? And you're saying that the first one is very important on what you do after. So can you talk about what that actually looks like right now?
Well, I'm involved with a group that's tops in the country, and I was in their legacy study for 5 years. I've donated my brain to the Boston University School of Medicine CTE research, and that's with the famous Dr. Robert Cantu and Chris Nowinski. And, things have changed a lot, and people are starting to listen. And it just shows so much more promise. What they're finding out, again, is about the youngsters. That's where the aim is right now. A lot of head injuries could be eliminated.
Right.
They want to go to flag football rather than tackle. And the repercussion is unbelievable.
Well, Chris, going back to your story and how it affects you on the job, can you speak to what some of the side effects of your traumatic brain injuries, how they present in terms of performing the job, and then do you have ways that you cope with it?
Yes and no. One of the beautiful things about technology and new requirements in law enforcement is body cams, mobile data terminals, all of these things kind of help alleviate the issues that, I personally have. So with the memory loss, if I, if I'm going to a call and I kind of space out for a second, I can look at the computer screen and say, okay, that's where I'm going. I've never had any issues when I'm on a call. It's, we go in, we handle the call, and that's kind of almost, I don't want to say on autopilot, but that's just been done for so long that it's just kind of ingrained into how to handle the calls. And with body cameras, being able to review the footage of what happened, is for me personally, one of the things that I do more so than others is my reports are very long. Whereas somebody will put a report that is a page or two, mine will be three or four. I put as much detail into the reports as I can just for the fact that I know in 4 years or 5 years, if I get called to court on something, there's no way I'm going to remember anything that happened that day. But if I can review my report ahead of time, it kind of triggers a memory of, oh, okay, now I remember what happened. Just being able to use technology that we have available today is really just phenomenal, and it helps me in getting where I need to go and kind of overcoming the issues with the injuries.
If I can share my experience and help just one person, or help one person help somebody else, that's what it's all about.
We're trying to break down the stigma. We're trying to share that there are great, effective resources out there.
Vulnerability is a strength. It's not a weakness.
What I've heard from all of the subjects in my film is that I think my story can help someone else.
And as police officers, we always want to go in, see problem, fix problem. And you can't do that with a mental health crisis. You have to see person and connect with person.
This sucks, but I'm going to have to embrace this suck. You know, I don't like these cards, but these are the cards that I've been dealt, and I'm going to have to play them to the best of my ability. And I've been trying to do that for the last 10 years.
We'll be back to continue our conversation with Ray and Chris about traumatic brain injury right after this Resilience Toolbox segment. Welcome to another edition of Resilience Toolbox. Today we're speaking with Jane Baker of Advanced Micronutrition. We'll be speaking about Jane's connection with the first responder community and how she's become passionate about first responder wellness.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me on your show. So I come from a long line of first responders, actually. My father is retired from the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, and I have an aunt who made captain as the first women's captain of a men's maximum security prison. And a lot of my family worked in the Michigan State prison system as well. And I myself have a weight loss story that I got my gut right, and I maintained a weight loss of 80 pounds over the last several years using food as medicine. So the relationship between my business and Heal Right was very synergistic, and because I love to work with first responders, I thought this was a great place to start.
Let's talk a little bit about the Heal Right bars and first responders. What are they, and what are they addressing in responder wellness challenges?
Police officers are 25 times more likely to die from a heart attack or stroke than in the line of duty. And being that we're aware of that, we wanted to bring them something that was convenient, but also going to be delivering them the micronutrients that they're missing when they're running through the drive-through or not eating properly because they don't have time on the job.
So we know there's deficiencies in probably a lot of first responder diets, and we don't always have time to sit down and have a complete meal or a nutritious meal. So go a little deeper into what Heal Right bars offer in terms of a better nutritional plan.
Yeah, so the Heal Right bars are designed to improve metabolic health markers and address things like obesity and chronic inflammation. The product does have 15 years of clinical trials and research. And the really exciting thing is that because people don't generally like to make a lifestyle change, people that were taking one bar a day for 8 weeks showed improved metabolic markers and lowered inflammation just by adding this into their daily diet.
Can you share a little bit about what kinds of responders are using the bars and maybe any success stories that you've heard?
Yeah, actually, so I'm based in Tampa, Florida, and we've worked a little bit with the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department and the City of Tampa officers. And the really great thing is that they're just excited to have something they can throw in their cruiser or keep on them handy. I always try to get them to not go through those drive-throughs. They do come in four different flavors. They do have whey protein. So it's really nice to hear people saying that they like having something that tastes good, that's convenient, that actually fills them up because they are so fiber dense. We did have one gentleman share with us that his cholesterol markers improved after only 6 weeks. And typically we don't see that till 8 weeks. So that was pretty exciting.
In addition to the portability and the high nutritional value of the Heal Right bars, can you talk a little bit about what kind of difference this can make to a first responder? How would it improve their nutrition and wellness?
Really, the bars are designed to fill in the nutrient gaps that we have in a standard American diet.
Tell us a little bit about the science behind the bars and what are some of the research and studies that are supporting it?
Yeah, so there's 15 years of human clinical trials and research. The really exciting thing about these bars, Dave, is that we can address the issues in the body using food as medicine. So food as the delivery system without the serious side effects of dastardly medication. There's a unique blend of fiber and micronutrients in these bars, and they are designed to improve the metabolic health markers. A lot of people don't get micronutrients in their daily diet. We hear a lot about macronutrients, but we don't hear a lot about micronutrients. The Heal Right bars will ultimately help with optimal gut health, and they will also improve your blood sugar, and they will help you maintain better weight.
If someone wants to learn more about these bars, how can they find you, and is there a sample they can try?
Yeah, absolutely. They can go to healright.com, and as first responders, they are welcome to enter the code RESPONDER15, and they get a 15% discount on their entire order.
Any other messages you want to share about Heal Right and Advanced Micronutrition?
As we're coming out of a post-pandemic world, I think there's a lot of exciting movement around food as medicine. And I think it's always very important to be proactive about your health versus reactive. So these are a really great way to throw them into your daily diet without making a lifestyle change. Of course, we do want people to live a healthier lifestyle, but I like to call this product the door opener. So for the person who's not quite ready, this tastes good, it's convenient, it's scientifically proven to help, and this is a fabulous place to start.
Jane, how can people find you or Heal Right out there on social media and the internet?
So we are on Facebook and Instagram as Heal Right Nutrition, and they can find me at MomentumLifestyleConsulting.com. And we are partnered with several other health companies to try to bring this movement forward.
Thank you, Jane, for sharing with us about Heal Right Bars and all you're doing on your mission to bring wellness to first responders.
Thank you so much, Dave. I love what you're doing, and I'm happy to be a guest.
You know, I was wondering, we talk a lot on this podcast about mental health, and I was wondering, this question really goes out to both of you, but do you see an impact either in your own life or in the general population with concussions and mental health?
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, okay. You know, as far as my own personal life, you know, it's caused some issues. But it's not anything that can be overcome. You know, my wife is very loving, very supportive. She understands. So, you know, if I ask her the same question four times, she understands where it's coming from.
Right.
You know, it she gets frustrated, which I can understand, because I would too.
Right.
You know, personally, I get frustrated when I ask the same question four or five times. And honey, you already asked me that.
Mm.
I did? Okay. Mm-hmm. As far as professionally, you know, it's, you see it more with, car accidents or, you know, people with a history of traumatic brain injuries.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be aggressive. They tend to be, you know, but you can kind of figure it out when they're repeating the same questions over.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, you know, I personally think I have a little bit better of an understanding with it, because now I say, okay, this isn't them. It's not, you know, I'm not taking anything personal. This is just,
right.
Hey, we got to kind of treat this with kid gloves and work around the problem, instead of someone who may not quite understand what's going on, where they'll go hands-on a little bit faster. Yes, he's being aggressive, but he doesn't know he's being aggressive. He doesn't understand that aspect of it.
Right.
So if we can talk to him and kind of bring him back down and help them to understand what's going on with their own body at that point, it makes things a lot calmer.
Yeah. And what you're talking about is important for everyone that's responding, law enforcement, fire, EMS, probably even dispatch, to take into account when there is a, you know, an MVA or some kind of, you know, impact involved.
Right.
Can I make a point on why it's going to always be misunderstood? Because it's invisible. Mm-hmm. Most people can't see the injury.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have the patience to understand, because usually if you haven't been through it, you don't even have a clue as to what's going on. So it's a tough one. It is.
Yeah.
The more education we get out there, the better it's going to be.
Well, Ray, I know that's your mission is educating. You're out there speaking at institutions, as we mentioned earlier. When you go out and do a presentation, give us a little kind of snapshot of what you talk about when you're out there presenting.
Oh, it's all about honesty. I tell them my story, what I got for not getting the help, which should have been common sense. But it was. I had that burning desire to keep going. I had that money looking at me, and I didn't have anybody, a role model, which I'm big on today. I didn't have a role model that I could go to get some good advice. And you know, I not only speak on concussion, but also on character, because good character, you'll tell the truth. And it just all goes into one ball of wax. Yeah.
Ray, what are you hoping that the scientists will learn? I know you mentioned you're donating your brain one day, a long day from now. What are you hoping that they're going to learn from being able to study your brain?
Well, they're going to learn that I definitely had a lot of head injury. But I think they already know what I'd like to say they're going to learn, is they can't develop a helmet that's going to prevent concussion. And I get so many calls to endorse a helmet that's going to prevent a concussion. But you know what? They can spend eternity trying to find that helmet. They're never going to find it because the brain is on a stem in fluid. And until they glue your brain, you know, to the side of your head, it's never going to happen.
Right.
It can eliminate the lacerations, but not the concussion. So I hope I answered that one.
Yes, it sounds like you're hoping that they'll glean some more ways to tell the general public about the effects of this and the long-term effects.
Yeah.
And the multiple effects that you and Chris are both talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, also you've got the background as an EMT. How do you monitor the physical and mental effects of the brain injury, or on the same track, if you were going to speak with someone, a patient perhaps in an EMS setting, what would you suggest to them in terms of things to be aware of?
You know, a lot of it is just rest. You know, you got to give your body time to rest. You know, we're in a society now where everything is instant gratification. Everyone has their phones, their tablets, their computers, TV. You know, what people don't realize is the more you watch those things, the more you utilize those things, your brain is still functioning when you're using them. It's very active. Turn them off. Just rest. You know, let your body heal, let your body recover, give yourself time. You know, kind of like, you know, what Ray was saying is, you know, we all have that money insight. We all have that, you know, that drive to get back into it. And, you know, I'm no different. We have to start learning how to take care of ourselves better and give ourselves the time to heal and the time to rest to be able to properly recover from it.
Great. Thanks.
You know, I in no way, shape or form can compare myself to what both of you have been through, but a couple of months ago, I was at a ski mountain and I finished skiing for the day. I went inside, took my helmet off, put my winter hat on, took my ski boots off, put regular boots, went outside to do something, slipped on the ice, fell on the back of my head, right on the ice. So of course, Murphy's Law, right? However, because I'm an EMT, as I was falling, even though I know it was a split second, I was thinking about what all of these repercussions would be for me afterward. And I was thinking of all the things that I didn't want to have to miss. And, you know, also being the EMT, you don't want the whole to-do, right? You don't want them to call the ambulance. You don't want to go get an MRI. You know, we're very, very stubborn about all of these things, right? But I had a borderline concussion. And just having that for the couple of weeks that I had it, I get a sliver of what both of you must have gone through all this time. It's very hard to slow down. It's very hard when you know, you feel inside, you feel the headache, or you know when something's a trigger or making it worse. It's so hard to have that self-control to stop and just to say long-term, this isn't worth it, right? Even if you want to sit and watch a show, you know that it's not worth it. But I think human nature, it's really hard to do that. So maybe if there's one thing that our viewers can listen to and learn today, it's that self-care piece. Whenever there is any kind of an impact, is so important. And letting the people around you, whether they're partners at work or superiors or family members, letting those people around you know what you're feeling and that you may have some limitations. Because that's the other piece, right? Ray said it before, it's invisible. No one knows until you tell them, walk them through it. And it's the same with PTSI, which we talk about all the time. So I'm hoping that our viewers glean from this, it's important to advocate and talk about it and to not keep it silent.
There's a New York State law, I believe, called Concussion Management Awareness Act 2010. Talk about that. Tell us what that is and what does it mean?
Well, in 2009, I think it was, I met with a Senator Nozzolio, and then he got together with Senator Hannon. And I told him about second impact syndrome and what we could do to prevent some of these athletes from unnecessarily getting hurt, but also to protect them from that second impact. It went before the Senate and went right through. Every vote was positive, and that took them a little time, but I think 2011, it was law, state law, that every student or athlete that received a concussion had to be out 24 hours minimum with the doctors to get back with an official clearance. So this way we gave 24 hours for it to manifest, because sometimes it doesn't come right away. And then to get back, you must have the physician sign in, and also bi-yearly, every coach, teacher has to go to a class for concussion. And the last one, which I'm really, really appreciative of, I had a little input in it, is return to the classroom after a concussion. To me, you know, that's more important than returning to competition, your classroom. So they ease the kids into it. A little bit at a time because of that rust that Chris is talking about. And yeah, we didn't understand that back in our day. So,
I remember this concept of cocooning that was going on for several years, where if someone had an impact, they were supposed to be in a dark room for several days. Is that still the practice that you're hearing about?
It's completely the opposite, and okay. I'm in a little disagreement.
Yeah.
Okay, with them. They want you to get right out there and be active to a point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm with Chris. That brain needs to rest,
right.
And that was my downfall. I took every fight I could take. I didn't care about anybody. I didn't duck anybody. Some of the trainers were telling me, hey, you need to rest a little bit, and I didn't take that warning. You need to rest. There's the fine line there. Fine line.
Well, as we wrap up, Chris, is there anything else that you wanted to add about traumatic brain injury that we haven't covered?
No, I don't think anything that we haven't covered. Just, you know, just to repeat that, you know, it is real. Like Ray said, it is invisible, and you know, it's something that we need to be aware of, and just give your body rest. You know, don't be the hero trying to go out and do everything, and you know, money will still be there tomorrow, and you know, the jobs will still be there tomorrow, and give yourself time to heal.
So it's like slow down to speed up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Ray, any other thoughts on anything we didn't cover?
Well, I guess in my world, I could talk all day. And the help is, the word is out and the help is there. Make the smart choice. And I'd like to see more conferences, more education. So let's, for instance, if you were to have one in Danbury, I would love to come down side to side with you and talk to the officers or talk to the high school there. And the education is where it all lacks. Okay, without that, if I had had a Carmen Basilio telling me to take a rest or go get this looked at in my day, I loved Carmen. I would have done it. But we didn't have anybody, you know, telling us that. So, bingo. Yeah.
Well, I really want to thank both of you for being so open and honest about how this has impacted your life. And we're hoping that it sparks something in our viewers, whether it's personal or professional, so that they can look a little bit more into this, have awareness, and maybe be more empathetic when they know that someone is going through this issue.
Ray, share with us where people can find you out there, where it's, what's your website, and maybe in some social media contact.
Well, I'm not a solicitor, but my second impact book by Andy Siegel, it tells a story pretty good about, it's not about glamour in that book. There's everything there is to do wrong, and it's in the book. So that's what I want the youngsters to learn, what not to do.
We'll put your website address up as well.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a website, Second Impact website, and it's pretty informative about where I go and what I do. But as far as I go with a lot of word of mouth. I don't advertise and I don't charge. A lot of these former professional athletes, they charge money to go and speak. I don't know. If I'm offered money, I want to donate it back to the cause. Buy the kids a different helmet or anything that protect them a little bit. But I may add that if anybody that's listening to this podcast, I've never turned down one. I've been from Maine to Seattle. And if you want the word, I'll come and talk.
Yeah. Thank you. That's incredibly generous of you. And Chris, do you want to share how people could get in touch with you?
You know, they can feel free to email me if they need to at C.Belair, it's Belair, at Danbury, danbury-ct.gov is my work email, and anybody can reach out to me there.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for sharing your journey and your experiences with traumatic brain injury. I'm sure it's going to touch some people that really need to hear this information. So we salute you for being so willing to be there and share it in service to others.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I'd like to remind you to like and subscribe our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. On Facebook, you can find us on Responder Wellness Inc. and Responder TV. We're also on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our website, respondertv.com, has past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.